Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Brooke Mullins is a woman raising her two daughters in Port Hope, Ontario. She grew close to her divorced dad as an adult. A few years ago, Malcolm moved to Mexico to spend his retirement winters relaxing amid the lush palm trees and sparkling beaches of Puerto Vallarta. He remained in close contact with Brooke until suddenly all contact disappeared. And when she tried to reach him, she received little help from his live-in girlfriend, Marcella. The authorities were indifferent and the police were no help at all, so taking things into her own hands, she flew down to Mexico to try to find her dad, or at least find out what was happening to him. And what she found was shocking. Malcolm is Missing is a personal documentary that traces Brooke's search for her father and some sense of justice amidst the crime and corruption lurking just beneath the surface. It follows her investigation, including interactions with journalists, lawyers, the police, and prosecutors, along with Malcolm's friends and colleagues there. The film is directed by Robert and Jari Osborne and features Brooke Mullins as its principal subject. Robert's an award-winning journalist and documentary filmmaker with over 30 years' experience at CBC on The Nature of Things, POV, and CBC Docs, along with CTV's W5, Global's National News, and National Geographic, among many others. The film is having a special screening tomorrow, January 29th, followed by a Q&A at Toronto's Hot Docs Cinema. So look out for that tomorrow. And I'm very pleased to have here with me Brooke Mullins and Robert Osborne to tell us more about Malcolm is Missing. Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, thanks very much for having us on, Daniel.
Thanks so much for coming in. And before I start, I just want to express my sympathies, Brooke, about what you've gone through in your harrowing search for your father.
Thank you.
Brooke, as an adult, you were close to your dad who moved to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, just a few years ago, where he enjoyed a happy life with a much younger girlfriend, Marcella, and her extended family. Now, this documentary starts up when you suddenly lose contact with your father. So what was your first sign that something was not right?
Well, I'd heard from my father. I can't remember if it was the day before or the day that he actually disappeared, or he went out that night, and he was telling me that he was going to head out to his treehouse. And it's normal for him not to have great reception out there for a few days because it's you know, it's very rural. He has to take a boat. It's like a Palapalo in the jungle. And then his friend reached out to me, who he was supposed to connect with, because my father was supposed to pick him up at the airport and they were going to go out there together. So when I first heard about it, I wasn't too concerned because I thought, well, he usually doesn't get the internet working for a day or so. But pretty much within 4 days, when they had looked and discovered he was not at Chancho's, where his treehouse was, I knew that something serious was happening and that my father was missing.
And he lived at the time with a woman named Marcella, living girlfriend. And when... talk about who Marcella is and what was her reaction when you asked her where your dad was.
So my father was introduced to Marcella in the end of 2012. Their relationship really started in 2013. So as you can imagine, she's been in his life for quite a few years. She moved into a home he bought with both her adult, like her parents, as well as her adult sons. And one son had two children and moved in with his girlfriend. So it was quite a big family living in this house that he provided to them. When I first learned about Marcella, it bothered me because she is only 3 years older than myself. And I've never had an issue with my dad having girlfriends because my parents were pretty much separated from the day I was born. It's just, there was also a language barrier. And so I never really, to be honest, felt comfortable with the relationship. I really tried. But I honestly have to say that I don't think she ever liked me from day one and thought me to be a threat. And clearly I really did turn out to be a threat. So, I mean, it was an awkward relationship to me from day one. But it was a long, long-term relationship.
And you asked her about your dad, where he was.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I did. I reached out to her and I asked her, like, have you heard from Malcolm? And she had just had her birthday after he had been missing 2 days. And he hadn't reached out to her on her birthday, as she had said. And she thought that was a little strange. But I can't imagine a single woman on the planet that would accept not hearing from her boyfriend on her birthday. And then she went on to ask me some very unusual questions about my family. Like, she wanted to know, you know, what my grandparents' maiden names were, what school my father went to. It was very clear to me that something was wrong. Those sounded like, you know, password questions. And I definitely got goosebumps on, you know, the back of my neck. And I knew that I needed to go another route, that I shouldn't be talking to her anymore.
So you went down to Mexico and you decided to try to retrace his steps on the last time people saw him, which brought you to a restaurant, and something you found there was really shocking. Now, this is a reason why you have to see this documentary, because we can describe it, but the shock is in actually seeing these videos. Could you tell us what you saw?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I should clarify that there are two videos that were caught in surveillance in this bar Andales, which is an amazing bar in Puerto Vallarta. I didn't actually see the famous video first. I saw a video of my father and Marcella leaving the bar, and I at that time realized that there was something seriously wrong, because my father was a tall, strong man who took big purposeful strides when he walked. It was always hard to keep up with him as a child. And I could tell in this video that he was struggling to walk. And my father's not a big drinker. It was confusing. I saw that he tried to help her at one point and she pulled her arm away. This is him and Marcella were there celebrating her birthday, allegedly. So I knew something was wrong from that shot. But then when we saw the part of the surveillance where she is directing his attention away from the drink, speaking to him, and she pours a powdery substance into his drink, I knew that everything had changed, and I knew that she was definitely a suspect.
This was caught on film.
And it was caught on film. You couldn't have asked for a better angle to see exactly what she does in this video.
This is the smoking gun. So everything was fine, right? The problems were solved. That was the end of your search, right?
I certainly thought so, but according to the Mexican authorities, it really was not. They had no interest. They accused me of doctoring the video. They were not going to go any further.
This is Daniel Garber at CIUT 89.5 FM, and I'm speaking with director Robert Osborne and principal subject Brooke Mullins about their new documentary, Malcolm is Missing. Robert, how did you first hear about this case, and what interested you?
Well, in fact, I read a very small paragraph in the Vancouver Sun, and it was really literally a paragraph that said this woman from Port Hope was fighting to have her father found in Mexico. And it resonated with me because I've done several other stories, documentaries, looking at Canadians who have run afoul of some kind of a problem in Mexico. People who have spent years in jail when they've never been charged with a crime. People who've had family members murdered and couldn't get the police to act, or when the police did act, they basically punted the investigation. And with Brooke's story, the minute I saw that little paragraph, I thought, I bet there's more to this than meets the eye. And so I went and found her Facebook group, Justice for Malcolm, and I saw that there was a person that I knew in common, another journalist that I was acquainted with, and I reached out to him and said, can you put me in contact with Brooke? He did. We talked on the phone, Brooke and I, for about an hour the first time, and I got off the phone and said to my partner, this is an amazing story. We have to try and get this story off the ground. Took us 2 years, but we did get it off the ground.
Now, the film, the documentary, shows a lot of the process of Brooke discovering things and finding things. But at what point in this process did you and the cameras start rolling? Was it all after the effect, or during, or at what point?
I think we got involved in, well, it's still ongoing, so during is a relative term, but I think we got involved in the fall of 2020 when I first, so it was the summer of 2020. Malcolm went missing in the fall of 2018. In the early fall of 2020, we went out and started doing our initial filming with Brooke. And that was to put together a demo so that we could show to the broadcaster, the CBC, what our vision was for this documentary. So from that point on, even though the wheels of kind of the administration of the of getting the funding together and all that kind of stuff ground slowly, we were engaged with Brooke and we were going out from time to time to film critical little events that were occurring. So from, I guess, around September of 2020.
Now, Brooke, in your search, you've had to deal with some uncooperative and frankly unsavory characters. Did you ever feel personally threatened or in danger because of what you were doing?
I've always been cautious, and I hope that I have a better gut instinct than my father obviously did. I definitely am nervous every time I go there, and there was at one stage where the police sent me a file, and I was looking through the file, and it was just literally bodies that they had found or clothing that was saturated in blood of different victims. And I remember one morning after looking at that while being there, getting dressed, and you have moments where you think, is this outfit I'm going to be wearing when my body's found? Am I going to be like covered in blood? I'm not going to lie. Absolutely. I continue to be scared, and maybe not by the people that you would assume or that I should be scared of. But absolutely. I know that I'm pushing the boundary a bit, for sure.
The problem is, Daniel, if you don't mind me jumping in here, and Brooke just alluded to it, you don't quite know who you should be worried about. So when we went down to do our filming with Brooke, and when we went down on other trips, we hired really experienced fixers, people who were journalists, who were used to doing stories on the cartels. We had a really good driver, Jesus, who really knew the lay of the land. But you're not just, you know, you can't just be saying, well, you know, I'm worried because if Marcella has some cartel connections or she's hired somebody, you know, we could end up somebody taking a shot at us or something. It could just as easily be a corrupt police officer. It could be someone in the prosecutor's office who orders somebody to take care of you because they don't like what you're doing. So you never are quite sure from which direction the danger is going to come. You just know that it's dangerous. And you know that for a couple of $100, somebody can be hired to kill you down there.
So corruption and crime seem to be two sides of the same coin in Mexico. How big a problem is this, do you think, Robert?
Massive. I'm writing a book right now. I've been asked to write a book on this topic, and I just was working on the chapter on the Mexican justice system. And it comes at the end of our piece where we say 98% of all violent crimes never go to trial in Mexico. And that is, people look at that, and it's almost a hard fact to comprehend, but it's not. And that's been consistent in Mexico for years. You know, I'm always reading research, and you'll read, you know, all 250 officers in the state of X just were recently rounded up by the state police and charged with corruption. 24 judges were just rounded up and all charged with corruption. It's endemic down there. In fact, I have one person who advances the theory that it is part of the economic model in Mexico, so they don't have to pay the police more. They just count on the fact that they're going to be shaking people down. But it's just endemic.
And finally, Brooke, you seem very dead set in your search for the truth. What keeps you driven for so long? Is it just an emotional thing, or is there something else inside that motivates you to do this?
That's a good question, because there's definitely been a lot of highs and lows, and I've learned not to respond emotionally to the highs or to the lows, because something that seems great might end up being the opposite and vice versa. I think, honestly, that hope for sure keeps me going, and little tidbits of information. I have Robert mentioned the Facebook page. I have an incredible support system of people that love Malcolm and so many strangers and Mexicans that care that they don't like what's happening in their country. They have missing loved ones. I just feel like I'm so fortunate that I got this far, that if I don't owe it just to my own family who continues to support me, I owe it to everyone else to like try to see this one through.
Well, it's a very interesting and quite moving story captured in this documentary. Brooke Mullins and Robert Osborne, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks again for having us, Daniel.
Malcolm is Missing is screening tomorrow, January 29th, followed by a Q&A at Toronto's Hot Dog Cinema, and will be screening on CBC's documentary channel in March. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies Eats, Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM, and on my website, Cultural Mining. Dot com.